On this 20th day of June 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 2, contents of the Gita summarized, text number 52. Yadate moha kalilam. Buddhi vyatitarishyati. Tadagantasi nirvedam. Shotavyasya shutasya cha. When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. Purport. There are many good examples in the lives of the great devotees of the Lord of those who have become indifferent to the rituals of the Vedas simply by devotional service to the Lord. When a person factually understands Krishna and his relationship with Krishna, he naturally becomes completely indifferent to the rituals of fruitive activities, even though an experienced Brahman. Sri Madhavendra Puri, a great devotee and acharya in the line of the devotees, says, Sandhya vandana bandhamasta bhavato bhosnana tubhyam namo bodeva pita dastatarpana vadhavna hang chamak chamyatam yatra kvapi na sandhya yadava karlottam sasya kangsadvisha smaran smar magam haramita dalam manyeka manyena me. All my prayers 3 times a day, all glory to you. All bathing, I offer my obeisances unto you. O demigods, O forefathers, please excuse me for my inability to offer you my respects. Now, wherever I sit, I can remember the great descendant of the Yadu dynasty, Krishna, the enemy of Kamsa, and thereby I can free myself from all sinful bondage. I think this is sufficient for me. The Vedic rites and rituals are imperative for neophytes, comprehending all kinds of prayer 3 times a day, taking a bath early in the morning, offering respects to the forefathers, etc. But when one is fully in Krishna consciousness and is engaged in his transcendental loving service, one becomes indifferent to all these regulative principles because he has already attained perfection. If one can reach the platform of understanding by service to the Supreme Lord Krishna, he has no longer to execute different types of penances and sacrifices as recommended in revealed scriptures. And, similarly, if one has not understood that the purpose of the Vedas is to reach Krishna and simply engages in the rituals, etc., then he is uselessly wasting time in such engagements. Persons in Krishna consciousness transcend the limit of Shabda Brahma, or the range of the Vedas and Upanishads. Om Jnana Timarantasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chukshur Unmilatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, there's a nice verse Srila Prabhupada would go off and quote, Aradito yadi hadista pasata takim. Naradito yadi hadista pasata takim. Andabahi yadi hadista pasata takim. Nandabahi yadi hadista pasata takim. Which means that if you're already worshipping Hari, then what's the use of performing severe austerities? You're already there. And if you're not worshipping Lord Hari, then what's the use of performing severe austerities? They're just a waste of time. If you're already seeing Lord Hari within and without, then what's the use of all these severe austerities? You've already reached the goal. And if you're not seeing Hari within and without, what's the use of these austerities? You're simply wasting your time. You see the point. This verse and the next verse describe one who has passed beyond the delusion of the flowery words of the Vedas. The theme here is that Arjuna doesn't need to be, shouldn't be bewildered by the promises of heavenly rewards for performing rituals and activities in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. Arjuna, if you recall, had an argument in the first chapter why he didn't want to fight. And part of that argument was based on the Vedas. He said, I have heard that those whose family traditions are destroyed dwell always in hell. And the implication is, so do to those who cause such destruction. And he was implying that if he fought this battle and he killed all these exalted soldiers and his grandfather and the guru on the other side, then he would cause havoc in society. There would be foreigner sankara. There would be offspring who were not trained properly, and the offerings to the pitris and the forefathers would be disrupted, and all the havoc would break loose. I have read in the Vedas. He was trying to base his argument on the Vedas, because in the Vedic culture, especially at this time and in this context, everything had to be based on the Vedic word. You see, they were very concerned about dharma, doing the right thing. But Arjuna here is caught between two different views of dharma. And it's very illustrative because he wanted not to kill his Bhishma, and he wanted not to kill Drona and all of the brothers-in-law and cousins and everyone on the other side. And so his head was serving his heart. This is the higher you being controlled by the lower you, you see. We're meant to be guided by our intelligence, a good intelligence informed by the Shastra and embodied in exalted souls, Brahmins, sadhus, devotees. That's where the guidance should be, to control that lower animalistic self that we all have, right? The human animal. We've all come up through the species, right? We've evolved to this point, and we have, you know, these lower impulses and karma and all these things. That has to be controlled in the human life. Otherwise, it's no better than animal life. That's the idea. So there's always a struggle, you know, provided one has some good instruction, between what you should, you know, you should do or should not do, and what you know you want to do or want to avoid doing. So the question is, how do we strengthen the Krishna conscience? There's a nice term, Krishna conscience. The conscience is that little voice inside, is guiding you in the right way. You don't always listen to it. And then if you don't, you feel guilty, right? And if you keep violating, after all, you don't feel guilt anymore. You've silenced it so much that you're just working on impulse. Then you're in lower modes of ignorance, you're leading an animalistic life. So Krishna consciousness means to place oneself under the guidance of this perfect instruction. And the practice of Krishna consciousness gives one the strength to follow that instruction. Because in and of itself, reduces the strong impulse, the vega, what's called the vega, vacho vega, of the lower self by practicing chanting and hearing and doing these things. This is the only reason why we could go on in Krishna consciousness. But there's a philosophy behind it. So both have to be there, strengthened will through the intelligence and the purification of the senses of their long time addiction to sense gratification. So here he's saying, when your intelligence has passed out of the dense darkness of illusion, what is that darkness of illusion? That you can be happy in this world, that you can perform sacrifice and go to the heavenly planets where you can enjoy even more. You know, it's just like people don't know about heaven. You know, they dream that they're going to go to heaven when they die. You know, but basically they're trying to get to heaven here. They're trying to build a life in this world that's happiness. And that's, you know, very rare. Billions of people in this world are just trying to survive from day to day. Some of them are failing in that. But there's a small group, you know, I don't know, a billion out of 6 billion or maybe less or more, who seem to have a chance of improving their material life and, you know, try to get what they see on the advertisements. This word, shrotavyasya shrutasyacha, hearing about, right? Now it's not just hearing about, you're also seeing it on so many screens and billboards and movie things, right? Giving you a desire to strive towards some material perfection or some material goal. People are dreaming of that. They're working toward that. They're planning for that. Their whole mind is, from a young age to try to achieve these goals. So Krishna is saying, this is just a phantasmagoria. This is part of the moha kalilam, the dense forest of illusion. There really isn't anything out there. There's no permanent happiness to be had, even in the heavenly planets. What to speak of in this miserable planet? You know. So when your intelligence, by practicing some of the principles Krishna just outlined by performing your duty and giving up the fruits of the activity in text 51, by fighting in yoga, you know, the art of all work, you know, and in this way getting rid of sukata and dushkata, both good and bad reactions, by, in 49, giving up abominable actions by devotional service, buddhi yoga, on the strength of buddhi yoga, by being fixed in yoga, in text 48, and giving up attachment, and being equipoised in perfection and imperfection. All of these processes are meant to bring the intelligence out of the dense forest of delusion. So you're no longer imagining that by fruit of activity you can be happy in this world. And so here he's giving an example of Madhavendra Puri. Now Madhavendra Puri was this exalted devotee who appeared in the line of Madhva, but he introduced this very refined worship of Radha and Krishna into the Madhva line, and he is the forebearer of Lord Chaitanya's line. Lord Chaitanya took initiation from Ishwara Puri, who was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. And Madhavendra Puri also, he met Nityananda. Some say he was Nityananda's initiating guru. But he embodied the highest levels of prema bhakti in Radha Krishna worship. So he wrote this rather humorous verse, in which he says to, you know, all of the normal things that you do in a Vedic culture for purification and worship, prayers three times a day, bathing. Now, of course, we bathe, but the ritual bath, you know, where you say the mantras and everything's very precise, and that's, you know, he says, obeisance to you. In other words, goodbye. I'm not going to worry about you anymore. Demigods, forefathers, I respect you, but excuse me, I'm not going to pay attention to you anymore. Wherever I sit, I remember the greatest, and I remember Krishna, and thereby I can free myself from sinful bondage. In other words, the wonderful thing about it is, otherwise we're lost. There's no way in the world we're going to perfect the chanting of mantras. We can hardly even chant Bhagavad Gita's books. No offense, I can't chant them properly. You know, that's what the meaning of lecha. The meaning of lecha means you can't pronounce Sanskrit properly. Mlech, 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 mlech. That's what it means. So we're hopeless. There's no way we're going to get to the heavenly planets. Our only hope is to go for broke, for Goloka Vrindavan. You know, once you're in Krishna consciousness, everything else is taken care of. There's a nice verse in I think Narada Muni speaks this verse. What is it? Devarshi bhutapta dvinam patinam nakin karo nayam hini charajan sarvatma nayak shadanam shadanyam kato mukunnam padiritya kartum. So we come into this world with debtors. Means we just think of our lives. You know, we just go along breathing nicely, right? We never think about it until we can't do it, right? Until it's something. Where did air come from? We didn't create it. We can spoil it with doing that, but we can't create it. The water, the light, the blood pumping through our veins, digestion, everything. Knowledge. So here's a partial list. Devas, all the devas, we owe them. You know, Krishna says in the next chapter, if you take these gifts from the devas and you don't offer them back some respect or some oblation, then you're a thief. Yo bhunkte stena evasa. If you enjoy these things without offering, you're a thief. And thieves can never be happy. So, deva, rishi, for knowledge. In the broadest sense, the rishi, just the teachers. You know, even our grade school teachers. You know, we're indebted. What to speak of our parents? What to speak of? Great teachers like Srila Prabhupada, all these people he quotes, Krishna himself. We're in debt. Bhuta, people in general, and even animals in general. You know, we rely on so many, I mean, the cow for milk, of course, you know. People, Nirnam, Patrinam, the forefather. So, Devashi, Bhuta, Nirnam, Patrinam, Nakin Karo, Nayam, Rini. Rini means a debtor. You're not a servant or a debtor to any of these, provided sarvatmanak yak sharanam sharanyam, that with your whole being, with your body, your mind, your words, and everything, sarvatmanayak sharanam sharanyam, you take shelter of the true shelter, Krishna. Sharanam Sharanyam Gato Mukundam Mukundam Padiriti Kartam. In this way, you're giving up the sense of being the doer. In other words, you're not responsible. You're simply like a soldier on a battlefield. He may kill so many enemies. He gets a gold star for that or a medal. You know, he's certainly not responsible in the sense of being implicated in some crime. So, whatever we do in Krishna consciousness is certainly not incurring any new karma. This is the science of nice karma, meaning working in such a way that you're not getting any bad karma, you're not getting any good karma. You're simply working as an agent of the Lord. And therefore, you're indifferent to success or failure. That's up to Krishna. You do your best. You have to do your best, sincerely. But the result of it is up to Krishna. And you're simply trying in that way is your own success. You know? Unlike in the material thing, where you may try in so many ways to the best of your ability, but if you don't succeed in building the bridge or getting the degree or getting the job, you failed. So many people in the world today, they work this way, that way. You identify with the job, right? Oh, I'm an auto worker. Oh, I'm a secretary. I'm this, I'm that. No, you're not. You're an internal servant of Krishna. But they don't know that. The job is very ephemeral. One day you have it, next day you don't have it. So now what happened? I'm no longer worth anything. I lost my job as an auto worker. You see the problem. You know, there's almost a psychological problem here. But devotee, you always have a chance to serve if you want to serve. And if you can't do anything, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. That's the best service. That's service. You're connected to Krishna. You see? And at another time, there's other things to do. You're always able to serve. This was Prabhupada's great gift. He provided the environment and the opportunity to serve Krishna and to chant the holy name, the most, you know, teaching us that way.
Not out of job, always you are in job.
You're right, you're never unemployed. No unemployment in the Hare Krishnas. You know? And not only that, but you're in your constitutional position. This is your eternal employment. Internal employment as a devotee, and the wages just keep getting better. There's actually verses like that. What is it? I forget the verse now, but he described that. I don't, you know, ask for anything except the treasure, prema dana, you know, the treasure of devotional service. That's what we're praying for. That's what we pray for. And you know, it's just the opposite. There's no material thing. You can be, you know, completely destitute. But if you have that prema dana, you're the richest person. The Goswamis are the richest. Gopi bhavara samatabdala halika lola magnomoha. You know, they had nothing. They gave up a vast aristocratic circle. You know, just think. I read this story yesterday. It's so pathetic. You know, these people who have power and money, and there's a small upper crust in this world, 0.1% or less, who have tens of millions of dollars. You know, what to do with all that money? So in New York City, you know, this is the place where you can really spend your money, you know. They have these clubs, exclusive clubs. You know, you have to pay $50,000 to get into the club, and then it's $15,000 a year dues. You know, and you sit there in the club, and they have all of these, you know, what do they call it? Like a spa. You know, where you can go and get your body toned up, and they all have all these machines, and oh, one little pimple here. Okay, we'll work on that. We'll get that. Yeah. And you know, and the people walk in, they have, you know, $10,000 bag over here and the shoes and everything. You're walking around, you're worth $50,000 just in the clothes. Is it? $5 for the whole wardrobe for a whole year. Plus, I have to tell the truth, plus the dye. It was another dollar. So, you know, so who's got it better? They have to, you know, meet so much money they have to spend. They have to look just right, you know. They said that if somebody is not happy, some of the staff, they have all these staff. If they have a bad day, stay home. We don't want your frowny face today. Everybody has to be happy and, you know, artificial. See how pathetic that is? They try to create a heavenly planet on this earth. We went to the mall, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
So you went to the mall. These malls, they try to, you know, it's very scientific. The parking is off to the side. You go, and then you don't see the parking lot. And so all you see is here and there, you know, what you want, something to eat over here, something to wear over there, some toys over there, some, you know, everything. It's like heaven. And you just have your card. You don't even think you're spending any money. You know, you just give them the card and you will go off of it. You know?
They had a commercial a couple years ago and everybody's using their card. And then somebody breaks out their cash and it just destroys the whole scene.
Yeah, they create this mood that you don't even feel like you're spending money. You forget that you have to pay later, you know. But this is the essential thing, you know. Enjoy now, pay later. Forget about the paying later, see. So the heavenly planets are like that. Enjoy now and forget about the future. Even if the future is 10,000 years away, it comes if you're on the material platform. Chine punne marcha lokam vishanti. Marcha is the world of death. You have to, after enjoy, you have to come back down. After, at the mall, you have to go back to work. And then after you mall, get fired, pink slip. Oh my God, I can't go to the mall anymore. You know, now I have to worry if I even have a house over my head. And the whole thing comes down on your head and you're in great anxiety. But if you stay close to the ground, so to speak, like the Hare Krishnas, you live a very simple life, don't go into debt, just live within your means, you know, and just take your pleasure within. One who is joyful within, illumined within, it's fifth chapter, you know, then he's very happy. You have the ocean of happiness in your heart, you see. So that's why he says nirvedam, the very important word. Nirvedam, now Veda means to know, nir means not. Means I don't want to know. In other words, I'm indifferent to it. Who is in a better position? One who has $10 million and he feels compelled to join this club, look just right, be just right, you know, keep it going. And unlike the person with $50 million, he has to pinch his pennies. Because he has to, you know, he can only buy so many, you know, this yacht is not quite as big and so forth. You see what I'm saying? And then, get older. How long can you be in the club? How long can you have the Botox? How long can it happen? You know, where you can preserve that youth and beauty. And without that, what good is all the money, you know? See the problem? I don't have youth and beauty, but I got Krishna. You have, anyway. So nirvedam, tada gandasi nirvedam. When your intelligence is passed beyond this, you know, this illusory enterprise of trying to enjoy the senses, then you can be happy. Who cares what they're promising you? You know, who cares what someone enjoyed? What has been heard? What is to be heard in the future? There's a nice verse by Kapila Dev Muni. He has something called the Sadhu Sangashtaka. Sadhu Sangashtaka, okay? And it just happens that there's 8 verses there based on the theme of association with sadhus, Sadhu Sangha. And he describes there exactly what's being described here in this one verse. He elaborates on it. I won't go through the whole Sadhu Sangashtaka, but what he's saying there basically is that the very attachment that we have to the things of this world, which bind us like strong ropes, needs to be transferred to sadhus. And who are the sadhus? Those who are tolerant, the friends of all, who never have any enemies, who are devotees, one pure devotees of Krishna, who are ready to give up anything for his pleasure, who spend their time absorbed in hearing and chanting about him, and thus who are transcendental to some of the miseries of this world. They don't feel them as much. So he advises his mother, you should search out such sadhus, associate with them, because by their association, you will get rid of all the faults of your previous bad association. You see, association is just like a disease. You catch it, you know. Sangat sanjayate kama. By your association, your desire develops, your whole consciousness develops. So it's just like if you contact or contract a disease, it doesn't develop all at once, but then all of a sudden it manifests. Well, it's because of a history of contact. You infected it. So sangha is like that. You associate with the wrong persons, the wrong milieu for a while, and you'll be like that. You'll become like that. You know. So there are all kinds of faults, all kinds of character flaws that we've developed through lifetimes of previous association. This is called sangha dosha, and sangha dosha hara ite. By good association, you'll get rid of all your faults from previous bad association. And this is what he's telling his mother. So then he says, if I can recall, Bhaktapaman Jatavirat Viraga Aindriyad Drishtashutan Manrutanano Chintaya. This is Drishtashutan. So he said, by the process of bhakti, now he has a kind of a one verse that's quoted all the time. This is like a seminal verse for Krishna consciousness. Satam prasangan mama virya sambidam. Bhavandi ritkana rasayana katha. Tadjoshanarasu abhavargavartmani shraddha ratir bhakti anukamishati. What this means is that by this strong, you know, intense association, prasanga, with sadhus, satams, the devotees, you will hear a conversation about, Kapila Muni is speaking, he's an incarnation of Krishna. You'll hear a conversation about my powerful pastimes, mama virya samvidam. Virya is like virile, powerful, same word in English. And that conversation, that talk, that Krishna katha, is bhavanti ritkana rasayana katha. That katha is like a life-giving elixir, rasayana, for the ear and the mind and the heart. Ritkarna means the heart and the ear. It's nectar, you know. And it's the process of yoga. So he says, Rasayana Katata Joshanat Ashu Abhavargava. By employing this path, Abhavargavartmani, it's called a path of Abhavarga, liberation, one quickly develops three things: Shraddha, Rati, and Bhakti. Please, on the men's side. Thank you. Shraddha, Rati, and Bhakti. So Shraddha is? What is it? Shraddha? We know this word.
Faith.
Exactly. Bhakti, Rati is attraction or love, and Bhakti is devotion. So they develop one after another. And then the next verse comes. Maybe you can give them a book.
Or you can sit by the book.
Oh, you can sit where the book is. Yeah, there you go. So then the next verse says, by this process of bhakti, bhakti apaman jati viraga, gives rise to viraga, detachment. That was the whole theme. That's the theme of this. Nirvedam is the same thing. Viraga aindriyad, of the senses for the sense pleasures that you've drishta and shutan, that you've seen or that you've heard about. What you've seen is what you see in this world. What you've heard about is the heavenly planet. Show them where we are. Text 52, chapter 2. There you go. Text 50. So you see, you develop that. Then he says, chittasya yato gahane yoga yukto. By employing this process of yoga, the mind remains fixed. Just like you're leading this kirtan. Now in the kirtan, this is exactly what he's talking about. This is also mamavirya sambido. This is sound vibration glorifying Krishna. It's the best. It's kirtan. His name is not different. So everyone is absorbed. People get it. They're performing yoga. It's yoga. And time flies. You told me you had a 4-hour kirtan, you forgot about it. Everyone participated, right? Because you're absorbed. So this is called chittasi yoga gahane yoga yukto. It means employing this process of bhakti to control the mind, to absorb the mind in Krishna. And yatishyate rijubir yoga magai. So rijubir means easy. It's easy. Otherwise, how are we going to practice it? Are we going to go out to the forest and practice pranayama? No, but we can learn to sing and chant Hare Krishna. And you're sitting here in the class reading the book. This is yoga. We're practicing yoga right now. So this is what he's saying. This is very easy, the easiest practice of yoga. And it's serious yoga. It's doing what yoga is meant to do, which is to attract you to Krishna, to the transcendence, give you this spiritual strength by increasing your intelligence, you know, in Krishna consciousness, buddhi vetatadishati. And it's eliminating your previous karma and your attractions to things of this world. That's the purpose of yoga. That's the only purpose of yoga. This is to attract you to Krishna and ultimately take you back to God. So, therefore, you know, that's how we can strengthen this intelligence and pass beyond the dense forest of illusion by the practices that we've given, centered on hearing and chanting amongst devotees. That's the process recommended by Kapila Dev. Any questions? Yes, Opa.
I understand that you have to keep your mind fixed and not be swayed by what's around you.
Uh-huh.
And again, not be swayed. So, but it's easy to do that when you're around like-minded people.
Yes.
But how do I not get affected if I'm around elements which I don't like?
Right. That's the $64 question.
Being judgmental. I understand that, but I don't know how to
I'm gonna. Okay, so the question is how to remain fixed even when you don't have sadhu sangha. Yeah, you have asadhu sangha. Right, you rarely have it. Yeah. Well, this is what you need to. It's difficult. It's very difficult. What you need to do is plan so that when you take your vacation, you get full immersion. You know, maybe you go to a festival. And you do nothing else but Krishna consciousness, and try to. The most important thing is to develop your skill and your experience in chanting japa, because that chanting japa is what you can always take with you, even if you're in the middle of your office or wherever you work. If you're saturated, if you practice the holy name, you have to carve out a period of your time in the morning, you know. An hour, 2 hours, whatever you can do, where it's nothing but Krishna consciousness. You're chanting, maybe you have a little altar, you read, you know, best if you have someone you can do it with, of course. But you just saturate your mind with Krishna consciousness, and especially the chanting of japa. You know, the more rounds you can chant where you're really hearing, you know, you're focusing, you see the mind, the battle. You're thinking of what has been heard and what is going to be heard. But you can't. That's a great sage who said, be here now. You know, that's an eternity. It's yoga. Be here now means in this moment, we simply be with that sound, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And develop it in such a way that you can continue it, even in bad association. And the books like the Bhagavad Gita give you the ability to see the world in terms of Krishna consciousness. Yeah, but to see Krishna even in things that are not so obviously Krishna, you know, not directly related to Krishna. In other words, we're living here in a temple. Okay, everything in this room is meant to remind us of Krishna. Mm-hmm. No, so it's an ideal environment. That's why it's here. That's why we maintain it. But then we go out on the beach. There's nothing there that directly reminds you of Krishna. But if you read the Bhagavad Gita, and then he says, Rasoham apsukonta yapapasmisha, I am the light of the sun and the moon. Oh, I see. Now I'm seeing the sun. This is also Krishna. I'm seeing the moon, the ocean. You see? In other words, you can begin to see Krishna everywhere through his energy. That's the idea. It takes training. And it's not easy to do it without, you know, full immersion. So you need to try to get periods during your regular life of full immersion early in the morning. And then when you get your vacation time, hopefully, you know, you just come stay at the temple or go to New Vrindavan or Mayapur or somewhere where you're out of your ordinary milieu. You just dive into Krishna consciousness. And you come back from that transformed and at a different level, being able to. It's a battle. Admittedly, it's a battle. But it's the best we can do.
It's this whole thing of, I don't want to be judgmental. This is not me. This is this person's life. And it's none of my business. But how do I not have that? That's so nasty to be judgmental. Like, oh, look at you. You're...
Well, you don't want to... No, you have to have compassion. You have to have compassion. Hold on. It's you know, that word judgmental is itself judgmental, you know. Krishna's good judgmental on every page. You know, do this, don't do that, Arjun. This is wrong, this is right. But the question is, how do you feel when you're doing it? In other words, these people are ignorant. The people you work with. You know, 99.9. Everyone is ignorant. They have no idea of this stuff. So, some of them, maybe on the basis of friendship with you or whatever, may be open to a little, you know, you do it with skill, thinking about the idea of vegetarianism or the idea of reincarnation. You know, that's something that's kind of in the mix now. You know, there's TV shows about reincarnation. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, it's not just an alien, you know, weird idea anymore. So you approach it through that way, and especially prasadam. You learn how to make some really nice thing offered to Krishna, and you bring some treats or you bring some pakoras or, you know, something. Says, oh, because everybody can relate to that, you know. So in this way you'll find some people who maybe, you know, you can influence. That's not being judgmental, that's being merciful. You know. We're in an ocean of, you know, people who don't know anything about anything. and are performing all kinds of sin from moment to moment. And we know that. We don't hate them. And those who are incorrigible, we avoid, you know. But those who are corrigible, who maybe can be influenced, we try to help. And in this way, you don't feel like you're, you know, lording it over anyone. Rather, that you can be a medium through which they can be benefited. That'll change your whole attitude. What were you going to say? Yeah, dear.
Well, I wanted to interject two things. Number one, when I feel that way, I always tell myself Krishna loves him as much as he loves me. You know, and that's just where they're at. And then another thing, something that I've been doing lately is I listen to Ajahn's recordings while I drive, and it just makes my trip so much more pleasant.
There you go.
Somebody runs a red light in front of me, and it's just like I see that big smile on his face while I'm driving and listening to his chanting, and it's just like, that's okay.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do in the car, in the commute, that can really make it transcendental. What were you saying?
I was saying that anybody, Krishna devotee, if I have gone through a couple of years, understand some sort of understanding about Krishna consciousness. So when you go out there, you don't judge anybody because you know the material nature is like this. So it cannot be judgmental, you know. You just feel, my God, really. Then you think, then you appreciate what Krishna consciousness is about. And you don't judge anybody anymore. So my God, look at this. What a beauty of Krishna consciousness these people lost, you know.
Yeah, you try to give.
You're not judging anymore.
You try to give it because you realize more there, but for the grace of God go I. Mm-hmm. In other words, I was like that just a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so they can also change.
Yeah.
And everybody is a potential devotee.
So that
you know, this is it.
You don't judge anymore.
Yeah, you just try to give. All right, let's do one more. Shuti vipratipannate. Yadasta sati nishchala samadha vachala buddhis tada yogam avapsyasi. When your mind is no longer disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas, and when it remains fixed in the trance of self-realization, then you will have attained the divine consciousness. To say that one is in samadhi is to say that one has fully realized Krishna consciousness. That is, one in full samadhi has realized Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The highest perfection of self-realization is to understand that one is eternally the servitor of Krishna and that one's only business is to discharge one's duties in Krishna consciousness. A Krishna conscious person, or unflinching devotee of the Lord, should not be disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas, nor be engaged in fruitive activities for promotion to the heavenly kingdom. In Krishna consciousness, one comes directly into communion with Krishna, and thus all directions from Krishna may be understood in that transcendental stage. One is sure to achieve results by such activities and attain conclusive knowledge. One has only to carry out the orders of Krishna or his representative, the spiritual master. So one of the things about Srila Prabhupada's books, you know, that, you know, when after a while you read them, and you kind of take it for granted, but we should periodically remember. The thing that comes through here is that he's experiencing this. You know, this is the idea that one comes directly into communion with Krishna. Oh, Srila Prabhupada has come directly into communion with Krishna. You know, that's understood, and that's what's unique about these books. It's not something that he's just saying someone else did. He himself is saying that you can't write, you know, certainly, you know, in a certain way, with such certainty, without having experienced it. And there's many passages like that. And so what these words do, which is the key gift of the spiritual master, is induce faith in the process. Because it's like someone, you know, coming back from China, you know, and said, oh, I saw the Great Wall of China. It was a wonderful thing. It isn't that. Well, okay, he's my friend. He never lied to me before. You know, maybe he has some snapshots that even makes him, you know, it's for real. It's for real. I haven't seen China. I've never been there. And I haven't seen the Great Wall. But I have full faith that it exists. And maybe I'll even go there now that, you know, you did. You see? So obviously there's not going to be any snapshots, although we can have wonderful descriptions and beautiful paintings, which are as good as snapshots, you know. But the whole idea is that there is someone who has been there and who was there at every moment and is giving us this account. And this is why Srila Prabhupada, you know, was so urgent to come to America. He felt so compelled. Because who else could possibly give that? No one. Mm-hmm. There are other realized souls, but no one had that rare combination of the impetus and the order and, you know, and everything that Srila Prabhupada had. Even the language, you know, the English, he knew English.
Very
good
English.
Yeah, English well enough
to
know.
Anybody can understand like a stupid like.
That's what you get from every purport and every word that Prabhupada speaks is that certainty. And that's why he could instill faith. And as soon as that faith comes, that's the essential first greeting. Adau Shraddha, Rupa Goswami says. First comes faith. In what? Faith in, at least let me check it out. In the association of devotees. Hare Krishna, I understand fully. Is Maharaj coming?
Yes.
Yeah, but at 8:15 or now? 8:15 is darshan.
Okay.
Come 5 minutes.
We need to be staying at your home.
No, he's going to be staying here.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Can anybody help?
Yeah, please, go. So that faith is coming. You know, Krishna conscious person should not be disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas. All right, well, you can substitute. I mean, nobody here, I don't think, is being disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas. But, you know, we can be induced by, you know, Maya's inducements. It's interesting that we are now at the exact same lesson in the 11th canto, in the morning class, that Krishna's giving here, isn't it? He's talking again about the flowery words of the Vedas, right there in the 11th canto. And the same idea is there, is that... that Maya, I came to this conclusion, Maharaj gave this class, that Maya, please forgive me, this is kind of, is a pusher, you know, the push where you push drugs, you know, because all the sense gratification, all the illusions are ultimately just like drugs. They keep us addicted. You can be addicted to people, you can be addicted to this experience, that experience, sex addiction, you know, it doesn't have to be a disease, anyone. It's an unnatural thing for the soul. It's only for the body, and the body is not the soul, but that's the main addiction. So she's pushing this way, that way. Okay, you don't want this drug? Here, how about this one? You see? He's told the story of King Bharata, Maharaj Bharat, who he had already achieved the platform of Bhava. He had rejected his whole kingdom at a young age, right? He had a young wife and everything. He goes out to the forest, meditates. Very austere, very sincere. He achieves the level of bhava, just short of prema. It means he's experiencing ecstatic emotions in relation to Krishna. And what happens? You know? I mean, not that some, you know, and some woman comes along. No, that's Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. But what happens is that, some of you don't know the story. So there's a lion. He hears a roar of a lion. He opens his eyes. You know, he's in meditation. And there's a stream nearby, and this deer, this pregnant deer, is just by 1 inch getting away from the lion. The lions don't swim, apparently. So the deer got across the little stream, but, you know, was frightened to death, literally, and she died on the other side and gives birth to the fawn. You know, the little fawn is there. So now this helpless fawn has no mother and no father. So naturally, the kind-hearted bard, he takes the fawn, you know, washes it off, get a little feeding, put the finger in the mouth, whatever, you know. And, you know, okay. But then, now it's just him and the fawn. The fawn doesn't have anyone else but him. So he's meditating, and the fawn is, you know, chewing on his ear, you know. All right, let me give you something to eat now, you know. So before long, he's thinking, oh, fawn, fawn, fawn. He's not thinking Krishna. Maybe because when he's meditating, the fawn is getting into trouble, so he's, oh, where's the, you know, see? So he's distracted. So this was Maya's specific thing that she presented him with, you know, and he couldn't resist. So he had to take another two births, one as a deer, then as Jatabhat, and he went home. So it's a very important lesson for us. The lesson is that Maya will find some way to come into your consciousness, even though you're trying, you know, very hard. We have to be vigilant. That's why it says, Shrotavya Nirvedam, you have to be detached from all the things. Don't be, you know, here's the flowery language of the Vedas, but it can be any kind of inducement that we need to be indifferent to. So I was just thinking, one has to only carry the order or is representative of the spiritual master. So, you know, the thing is, Krishna consciousness is so fulfilling that it automatically makes one indifferent to everything else. This is how it works. But if one is not intensely Krishna conscious, if one is not strong in the sadhana, then that gives Maya a purchase on one's consciousness, and you'll find allurements. Not that, you know, it may not be the same thing, you know, gross allurement, maybe there's something very subtle, you know, profit, adoration, distinction, something. So it's a razor's edge. It's difficult. And we've seen stalwart devotees fall victim to the allurements of fame or adoration, distinction, you know, what to speak of money. So be careful. Any questions on these points? Actually, yeah, we have a minute or two. Ajamil, come on, you always have some nice comment. Now I know I've been successful. Even Ajamil doesn't have a comment. Bob, yes.
I was just wanting to elaborate on something we spoke of before. Now, as far as us going to heaven, is there and people who do not practice Krishna consciousness? You recall I asked you, everyone does end up in heaven. Now, there is a hierarchy, correct?
Hierarchy of?
Of souls. Obviously, Krishna is going to be more pleased with people who recognize him, practice Krishna consciousness, than those who didn't.
Right.
When everyone does end up in heaven.
When everyone?
When everyone ends up in heaven, eventually.
Yeah, we talked about that. Everyone eventually goes back to Godhead. But that eventually can be a very long time.
Yeah.
Krishna loves everybody, just like the sun is always shining. But it's up to us to purify ourselves so we can experience that love by reciprocating it. You know. And how sincere we are and how forthright we are, how determined we are, will determine how fast we come to that stage of purity, you know, and experiencing Krishna consciousness and giving up on all this other consciousness. So, it's, you know, eternity is a long time. I mean, it can go on for millions of births of Brahma. But we should feel very fortunate that we're on the right path. You know, maybe just another birth, another 10 births, dozen births, 100 births. It's nothing compared to what we've been through. So we should be thankful. But those births can be very painful. We don't want to go through it. We don't have time. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.